Hey, welcome back to another episode of After Hours with Amanda, the podcast that's about parenting, but not just for parents. And we cover a plethora of like life topics. We got that intro out of the way. How professional was that? Can I just tell you something? Y'all know we're supposed to leave for Hawaii this week. It's been a trip that's been 3 years in the making. There's been cancellations, reschedules, and all the things, right? All the things that have gone into, you know, the last 2 years and trying to travel. And I want to just talk today about this idea of mental health and the reason that I'm so passionate about it and the reason that I think that it's not something taboo that has to not be talked about or that should be taken care of in the shadows of quiet, hushed, blocked out appointments that no one knows what it's for, that we say, oh, I've got an appointment. That shame that I think is so ridiculous that stems from this idea of being judged. And like, I get it. Trust me, because there is this weird, stupid shame that is cast or almost weakness that is implied by people when you go and you ask for support, because that's what going to therapy is. Therapy is looking at your situation or yourself and saying, I could really use assistance here. And I don't think there's any other area of life where if you went up to someone and said, I need help with this, they would be like, wow, you're so weak. But therapy has this weird stigma. And I just want to kind of break down for you, because I get asked a lot why, not why I'm so open with therapy, but how I can be so open with therapy. In a very loving, appreciative way, most people will DM me and say like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for being so open about it. You've inspired me to go back to therapy. Or how did you get to this place where you could talk about it without being ashamed? And so I just want to share a little bit about that with you today. And I want to talk about this idea of therapy and try and change our mindset on this, because if we don't change our mindset on this, we won't change. You know what I mean? People always say like, don't worry about going out and changing the world. Start with yourself, right? Start with the way that we do things, the way we interact, the way we see things, our POV, our point of view. And so that's what we're going to talk about today, as I have my little coffee. I swear I've had like this little tickle, like nervous twitch in my throat all day. I feel like it's just like my anxiety trying to close my esophagus. But anyways, so if you hear me taking my coffee sips, that's where we're at. But I want to break it down for you. If you're unfamiliar with me or my podcast or my story or any of my kind of just background, you might not know I come from a family with a slew of mental health differences, deficiencies, differences, issues, whatever you want to call it. Mental health has kind of been just a cornerstone of a lot of the trauma of kind of growing up and how certain things played out in my life. You know, I've said this before and I'll say it again. My mom's growing up, it's not my story to tell her story, but she had a very difficult childhood, kind of littered with addiction from one of her parents, abuse, different things like that, which led her to this place of, you know, that old school mentality of kind of suck it up, do your thing and live life, right? Life's not that bad. And I'm telling you, I'm starting to get a disdain for this saying of life's not that bad. And I'll get into that later. But I've told the story before that my mom had a breakdown. I remember we were downstairs. I was in second grade. My brother was in fourth grade. It was an average night. My dad had gone to finish a contract with the company he was working with overseas. It was a 2-year contract, y'all. We had just moved back to Northern California from Southern California. And my mom had left all of her best friends. I had left my best friends, you know, and at, you know, a young age of second grade, you kind of like your friends, right? Moving's not as awful as like maybe junior high or high school, but it's still new. But for my mom, who had built this community, it was very difficult. My dad was overseas trying to do his best to provide. And my mom came to the top of the stairs after being in the shower for what seemed like a really long time. And she looked at my brother, who was in fourth grade. And she said, call 911. And we're looking at her like, okay, well, there's no blood. I don't see anything broken. And all of a sudden we notice that she must have been crying. She's sobbing. And she says to my brother again, Adam, call 911. And it was after that, just this slew of paramedics. And I mean, you're picturing me as second grade. I'm age 8. My brother is 10. We're kids. We're babies. And the paramedics are coming in and suddenly, you know, the cops are there because, you know, you've got two minors, right? And so there chatting with us, and everything was fine. My home life growing up was very good. My parents took care of me. There were other emotional things that played out as Adam grew up in his addiction, but my parents themselves were wonderful with us as kids. And so they came, she left in the ambulance. We went in the ambulance. My grandmother met us at the hospital. And that was really, honestly, my first introduction into mental health. Because at that time, I started going to a therapist in second grade because I had no clue what the hockey sticks was going on. My mom was in this hospital that still to this day, even saying its name makes me nauseous. But I went to visit her there, and going to a mental institution at 8 years old, meeting different people in different areas of mental support or mental deficit, it's impactful. It's really impactful to the point where it's low-key scary too, because you're not quite sure, right? That was my first introduction. And at that point, it was several years till my dad came home because he was on contract. And it was in and out of the two local hospitals that were mental hospitals. It was back and forth of friends and family visiting, staying with us. And I'll never forget, I had this real fear growing up of making my mom laugh too hard, because if she laughed, she would hit this borderline, and I've said this before, where she would just cry then. And then the crying wouldn't stop. She didn't quite know how to stop it, obviously. And so then I realized what Prozac was and what Lexapro was and what all these other antidepressants or anti-anxiety meds or different things. And for a kid grades second through fifth, this is a very impactful age. So mental health to me was very scary. My introduction into mental health was not one of health and beauty and expression. It was one of people reach their points and they lose it and you might not get them back. And it's very terrifying. And it's just this very all-encompassing snowball that just rolls downhill. So me having any relationship to mental health was more like, oh, no, I'm so fine. I'm great. I'm so great. Because the level of assistance that you need only comes when you have reached this point where you're being taken to the hospital. Like that is mental health right there. And so that was for me. And then, you know, that led to my brother, who ended up, you know, having different mental health issues with depression and anxiety and bipolar. And at the end, I mean, towards the end of Adam's life, he was an agoraphobe. He couldn't go outside. The addiction, there were so many things. So again, very negative relationship with mental health. This idea that if you're going to a therapist, it's because something is definitely wrong and you probably should be medicated. And it's not this thing that you're praising. It's not this thing that you're excited about, right? But at the same time, as this experience was scary and kind of gave me a negative view of mental health and that itself, it did open me up to the fact that these issues existed. And on the positive thing, because y'all know I can't not try and find something to be gained from situations, it introduced me to the idea that these things existed with anybody and everybody, because mental health doesn't discriminate. Okay. It's across all boundaries. It's across all areas, home lives. It reaches into any and every home. It doesn't discriminate. It doesn't care who you are. And mental health also has a lot to do with your genes, but that's not something, and this is something that I had to work through in therapy. It's not something to be afraid of. This idea of if you admit that you might need to go to a therapist, you're going to turn into that person that you saw have a negative experience. That if you admit therapy might be something you need, that you're completely unraveling and have no control and you're weak. Because these are all biases that we all live with. And whether or not we say we want to have them, I still have biases against myself that I have to recorrect and rewire when I'm in a session with my therapist. See, because here's the thing. I was watching this story from a friend the other day, and on her Instagram story, something had happened. And she made the statement that, she's an online friend. So like we've never met in real life, like IRL, but I think she's a doll. I just think so highly of her. She's such a beautiful light, right? And she called herself a baby, and she made mention of what she was talking about in stories, you know, being such a small problem. And here's the thing.
I absolutely understand that there are bigger issues going on in the world. There are people just fighting for basic rights to live life, to have clean water, to, you know, have basic human care provided, right? But what I'm talking about today is mental health. So we are not going to make our issues, we're not going to somehow invalidate ourselves. And that's what I see a lot of us doing. When we come upon something that might be difficult to us or that we might not have the skills for, we invalidate ourselves. We're crying, we're upset about something. Okay, you know what though? You know what though? I know it's just, I'm just overwhelmed, you know? And we start all this justification for merely showing emotion. And this always, to me, stems back to the fact that as kids, a lot of times when little people are crying, we're like, it's not that big of a deal. And so this rhythm, this drumbeat of your problem's not that big, there are bigger ones, you shouldn't be crying over this, it starts real young. And that's why for me, I have to catch myself, and I'm not perfect, you guys. Sometimes when my tiny people are crying about something and I'm at the end of my patience, like my plateau for that day, I'm like, okay, Amanda, you don't want to invalidate here, but like in the spectrum. And I'll tell my kids, like, you guys, all your emotions you are allowed to have, you are allowed to feel, but let's assess what we can do in this situation and how we can help it. Where can we channel this? Rather than invalidating them, helping them to kind of walk through that and discern where the issue is. What is it? What is the level that we need to give this? What is the control we need to give this, right? Rather than saying their experience is invalid, telling them how much weight, how much energy are you going to allow this experience to take from you, right? Is it because if it's a lot, okay, fine, that's okay, we're going to do that. But if we can look at it and say, maybe it's not as much, where can we better place that energy? Where can we better support ourselves, right? So it's not about invalidating the experience. It's about teaching them to discern how that energy is utilized, how that care and concern can be best put into areas of our lives. When do we need the help? How can we ask for the help? When do we need to ask for the help, right? So for me, this experience of mental health and growing up, I always had my brother in our lives. And Adam, between his addiction, his bipolar, his mental health issues, anything that I had going on seemed very basic. I was the sibling that was like, oh, I'm good to go. Yeah, no, I'm cool. So I ignored a lot of the signs that I was needing help because my problem seemed so much less than. And yes, of course, dealing with Adam's addiction, that was a top priority, obviously. But that did not make any of the other things I was going through invalid. But I invalidated myself constantly being like, Amanda, there are bigger issues going on right now. You don't need to speak up. You don't need to ask for this. You don't need to do that. And what it did was push me into negative relationships with narcissists, emotionally abusive people. And it led me from age 18 to 20 to spend the majority of every weekend drinking. Because I felt that I was around people that cared what was going on with me. I was in a relationship, no matter how toxic and negative and actually demeaning for me as a person, where somebody was like, oh, hey, how are you? Oh, your top priority, right? But I was able to be emotionally manipulated because I was out seeking this care that I was felt was being validated by somebody, even if it was only to manipulate me into the situation that they wanted. See, because what happens is when we don't place a priority on mental health and when we don't treat it as simple as an act of going to the gym, an act of choosing a green vegetable or taking a vitamin, when we don't treat it as such, it goes untaken care of. It's like your car. And I love this example of a car, of taking a car in for a tune-up, right? For example, you got to take your car in to get the oil changed. What happens if you don't get the oil changed? Well, it can go a long time because I'm speaking from experience. Sorry. The amount of times Blake looks at me and is like, Amanda, you've got to take the car in. And finally, he's like, you know what? Do you just want me to do it for you? Let me do it for you. The oil changed, it needs to be changed, but you can actually push a car pretty far without changing the oil. But you know what happens when you go real far without changing the oil? You're going to end up with a bigger issue than if you had just gotten the oil changed at the check time that they had put on that little sticker they put there that reminds you every day you're looking at it, oh, I need an oil change. A light's going to come on. Now, how many times have you ignored a light on the dash? Raise your hand. That'd be like me every single solitary time. I'm like, oh, you know what? Maybe I just need to turn the car off and restart it. That's what I need to do. The car is going to be fine. That light will flicker off. It's probably no big deal, right? So the light on the dash goes on, right? Now one light, well, okay, now we haven't changed the oil. The light on the dash is on. Now like another light pops up, but you still tell yourself, I've got other things going on. I'm too busy to deal with this. I will take care of on a weekend, but the weekend comes and you're too exhausted. You can't drive it to the thing and then you're going to be without your car. And then what if someone calls you and then you're stuck at the car shop? What if you don't have the money? What if it's a financial issue, right? What if the lights are on, the oil needs to be changed, but your bank account is telling you no, and so is your time constraints? Well, what eventually is going to happen to that car is it's probably not going to be very useful to you long term. You might end up blowing something out. I don't know. I'm going to say the transmission because that's the only thing I can think of in a car that actually like doesn't work and is a really big expensive deal. There are a lot of things I'm sure that are expensive with cars, and I know I sound ignorant right now, but I don't know a lot about cars. I never claim to. This is not a car podcast, but you're going to run the car into the ground. You just are. It's the same thing if you don't put gas in the car. You cannot put gas in your car. You might be like me where you wait till you get down to like one and you're coasting into the gas station. Can that just literally be the drumbeat of my life? In every area of my life, I'm coasting in, right? But if you don't, your car will break down on the side of the road and then you'll have to call a tow truck. That's going to be way more expensive. It's going to be way more work, right? Because then you got to tow the car to the shop and then they got to do the thing. Maybe it's not just out of gas. Maybe now you've done something to the oil can gas thing. You get my point. My point is that for too long, we have seen mental health as this area where it just can't be talked about casually, right? People can't just cry and it can be a cathartic experience. Something has to be wrong. Something has to be embarrassing. How many times have you apologized for crying? Oh, my Lanta. If I put a quarter in or a penny in every time I apologize to someone for crying for my life, I'd take us all on a cruise. Literally, all the people that are listening to this podcast, we could afford to go on a cruise. Because we make apologies for our emotions because we see them as inconvenient, because they were inconvenient before. See, when we tell ourselves stop crying, it's because it's usually stemming from a place of either embarrassment, judgment, or what we were told before. That's not something you need to cry about. I'll give you something to cry about. Hey, stop crying. People are staring. That annoys me to no end. Oh my gosh. And I did it. I did that with London. I'm not going to pretend like I wasn't a parent that was like, shh. And sometimes still I have to bite my own tongue, right? To be like, Amanda, don't you dare say it's because people are staring, because that is not the priority. That is not the priority here. But mental health is something that we need to do better with. We need to take more pride in saying, hey, I'm not ashamed. I'm asking for support. This is not shameful. This is support. We need to look at each other and say, I'm getting a therapist. And we need to be like, girl, you're getting a therapist. What is their name? What therapy are you doing, right? How did I find my therapist? I get this question a ton, so I'm going to answer it really briefly right here. Super easy. I asked my friends, is anyone in therapy? I knew a couple of my friends were. My friend gave me her therapist name. I texted her therapist. Her therapist said, I'm not taking patients. My daughter is. I texted her. She said, I'm taking patients. She said, but if we don't work out, here's some other recommendations. I know it feels really scary and you might be embarrassed or you might think somebody's going to judge you and be like, what do you need to go to therapy for? You turned out fine. Can we just look at this idea of I turned out fine? Oh my God. Come on. I turned out fine is literally just a justification to say, are you mildly functioning on some level where people think you're kind of quote unquote normal? What is normal? Do you hold any type of job, career, vocation? And are you like mildly social? Like this does not equate you turned out fine. This equates that you're a functioning person doing things. But this doesn't deep dive into how you feel, where you're needing help, where you feel like you could really use extra support. I turned out fine is just a reason to say, it could have been worse. I guess it's okay. It's justifying things to say, I didn't have it that bad. And you know what? A lot of us didn't. I could say I didn't have it that bad. You're right. I didn't. I grew up with two parents that loved me no matter their issues, no matter their personal issues. I had a brother through no matter what of his addiction, loved me fiercely, even when he was very angry at me. There was no one that loved me like Adam. But his mental health went unchecked because it was always seen by him as weakness. See, I don't give a shit what people think about me going to therapy anymore. And do you want to know why? Because my brother died from an addiction that was driven by unmet mental health needs and then over-medicated by things that he didn't need. See, I refuse to let one more person be alone in the world hurting on any level. I don't care if you slammed your finger in a door and now you're sobbing uncontrollably and it's the worst pain in your life. I'm going to come alongside you and say, that's awful. I am so sorry. Do you need a hug? I don't care how old you are. And if your child, I'm telling you this so much in love without any judgment, but I'm telling you right now, if your kid comes to you and has the balls to ask for therapy, the first thing you do ought to be offering them a hug and congratulating on the bravery it took. The bravery it took to come to you and all whatever they felt and say, I think I might need a little help. And if your kid hasn't come to you, that should be something that we should readily offer. Is there someone you need to talk about? Because it's not about talking to you. It doesn't make you less of a parent because your kid doesn't want to talk to you. It means that they need another place where they can feel unchecked, unjudged, and unburdening somebody. It doesn't have to be about us. See, when we say our kid could talk to me, they don't need to talk to a therapist, that makes it about us. They don't need you to solve their problems. They need to be taught coping skills. And you know what? I'm willing to admit I might not have all the skills my kids need one day. I could actually guarantee that I won't. I can totally guarantee it. Because my children, my tiny queens, they are not me. They will never be me. Thank God they're different versions of themselves with hopefully some of the qualities that are good. But I can already tell the ones that I'm like, Amanda, what are you doing here? You need to help them with this. See, because mental health is a real issue. And I think that it's really sad that we write it off to girls being emotional, that we write it off to boys not manning up. Do you know how many men commit suicide each year? Double digits, high 40s. I've seen the statistics because they're not allowed to talk about it. I'll tell you what, it's me, Rod. He talks about men's mental health all the time. He's an awesome millennial creator. That guy is just, he's so cool. I love what he's doing, and I love that he's leading with mental health as like the forefront of when he talks about things to donate to or go to, and he's an advocate for it. I respect that on a high level. Shout out to Rod. But the thing is that mental health is not taboo. Mental health should be celebrated. Mental health should be high-fived. You need a mental health day? Yes, good for you for having the strength to admit you're tired. Mental health days should be treated like sick days. Go home, rest, do what feeds your soul, and don't make yourself feel guilty. You're not lazy for taking a mental health day. You're not weak for taking a mental health day. You are a strong individual for saying, I could use some tools. Do you think a contractor who goes to build a friggin' house shows up and is like, oh gosh, I don't have the stuff I need to build this house today. I'm out of nails. You know what? I'm just going to sit here and not worry about it. I'm not going to tell anyone I'm out of nails. I'm just going to sit here with this half-built house. Hell no, he's going to drive to Home Depot and buy the nails. You want to know why? Because he didn't have the tools, and he can't build the house if he doesn't have the tools. It doesn't make him any less of a contractor. He ran out of nails. It makes him a smart contractor to say, oh my gosh, I ran out of nails. Can't build the house without it. So why do we put so much weight on other people's opinions and suffer in silence? I tell this story all the time. The first time I went to therapy and I told the person at the MAC counter when I went to buy the eyeliner or whatever I was buying that day, probably something I didn't need, but I felt like I saw on a video and wanted to try it. But I was like, oh, I had therapy today. And I made it a point, and I have made it a point when I go to therapy to say I'm going to therapy, to tell people that I meet randomly in life, oh, what are you doing today? Well, I have a therapy appointment, and you know, just casually mention it. Casually mention it, just boop, throwing it out there. Not only because for me, it destigmatizes it to myself. It makes it a part of my daily life. It lets people know I'm seeking mental health help. But what I really hope it does is I hope that somebody hears me say it and quietly in their soul, they go, wow, that was just so casual. See, then they just said they're going to therapy. And I hope it plants a seed in them if they need that strength. Because I will pull up for every one of you and high five you. You want to tag me, you're going to therapy? Tag me, you're going to therapy. You want to make a video, you're going to find a therapist? Make a video and tag me in it because I will celebrate with you. I am here for you. And let's touch on this issue, and I've said this before. I get the question sometimes in my DMs, how do you think as a Christian you feel about seeking mental health help, right? Because a lot of times, and I don't know who started this or who does, but I have even dealt with this myself, in the Christian community, people see mental health, and I'm not saying all, I'm not generalizing, so don't hear what I'm not saying, but there are certain individuals, just like there are individuals in every single solitary grouping in the world, that are a little different with their opinions, okay? And they would say that mental health is a lack of faith. And you know what I call? I call bullshit. Now, do I see myself some days being very fearful situationally of things? And for me personally, I remind myself, God doesn't want me to be fearful. Yes. However, seeking mental health is not a lack of faith. Realizing you might need to be on an antidepressant, an antipsychotic, an anti-whatever med is not a lack of faith. There are chemical imbalances. And if you don't think that for me as a Christian who believes that Jesus is a loving God who died for me, that a man who would lay down his life for me would not create resources for me to not suffer in silence, for me to live a better life, are you joking? Absolutely not. I find no shame in it. I find that going to seek help is an act of faith in yourself, that you know there is a loving God who wants you to live healthy. So let me, for any of you listening who have felt shame in that way, just dispel that myth. Jesus wants you to find the mental health and support you need, whether that's with a therapist, a doctor, or a pharmacy for your Prozac or Lexapro. I've been on Lexapro in my life before. When I was in college, I was going through such dynamic changes as I sought therapy that I had to be on Lexapro. It was too much. I could not handle all that was going on. But I also want to tell you today that mental health is not a journey that ever ends. It is a lifelong journey. And I don't mean that you won't get to a place where you feel great, because pre-pandemic, okay, felt great. Like I was doing better, right? Pandemic hit, girl took a dive. It uprooted some things in me. And do you know what I realized? Wow, time for a checkup. Let's take the car in, me being the car. Let's go back to therapy. And to get to that space was really hard. It was really hard to get to that space because it was at the same age that my mom had her breakdown. And by age, I don't mean my age. I mean my kid's age. It was very hard to admit that London, being my oldest, was at the same age I was when my mom had her breakdown, and I was seeking mental health at the same time. To get rid of that idea in my head that the two correlated, I still have to psych myself up some days. I still some days don't want to drive to therapy. This week, what am I talking about this week? Today at drop-off, because, you know, we're going to Maui, and because the girls don't have vaccinations, obviously, because they're not even old enough to be eligible, they have to have PCR tests to travel to Maui. And I feel as if they've been waiting for this trip and their joy hangs in the balance. And there's so many other things I can't get into about how my mind works with that, that I kissed London on the head today. And as I kissed her on the head, I had this immense, just electric shock through your body of fear. And I could feel myself wanting to start to cry because I knew the test was today. I was feeling relief. I was feeling anxiety. She's running for class rep. She's giving her speech today. And I could feel all these things bubbling up, and I'm giving her a kiss goodbye, and I'm trying to get into my car because I'm in the drop-off line, and I don't want to start sobbing, and I don't want to start crying because I'm feeling overwhelmed because I'm having an anxiety attack in the school drop-off because this week has just been hard for me. But that doesn't mean my therapy's not working. That doesn't mean I haven't come far. That doesn't mean I'm back at square one. It means I'm on this little roller coaster called life, and I hit a dip. And I have been fighting all week, you guys. I've been fighting the battle all week. The self-talk, the meditation, the days it doesn't work. But I do know how I work because I've been in therapy, and I know what's triggering me, and I know where it's stemming from. And I know at this point it's situational, and I know how to cope with it. And I know, as I talk to my therapist on Wednesday, what I need to do to navigate it. But I wouldn't be able to do that without those tools. So we're going to keep this episode real short and sweet. You take a car in for a checkup. If you're sick, you get a prescription. If you're not taking care of your body, you eat things that fuel it. If I have people on here who are like, oh, we shouldn't be doing all these things, we're over-medicating. Okay, Eat your broccoli, take your vitamins, do your meditation, do your mantras, do what is going to work for you, but you're taking care of yourself. So don't let the most important part of your body, your mind, go. Don't treat it like it's always going to be running for you. Don't trash it with things that don't feed it. For me, a lot of the things I do that help my mental health, K-Love radio station, talking out loud to God. I think it's so funny when people are like, do you pray about stuff? I'm like, yeah, but probably not how you think. I'm not over here, hands crossed all the time, eyes closed. I'm literally sitting in my car, like going to pick up the kids from school. Like, what was that, Jesus? What was that? Why'd we do that? What was that for? What was that? Like, I'm not happy with that. Like, that's how I pray. Ice rolling my face, drinking sleepy time tea. I love this one. What is it called? Celestial something. It's a little bear on the thing. Taking my vitamins, trying to remind myself that physical exercise will clear my head. Coloring. I love coloring. Sometimes when my anxiety is too high, I can't read because I can't focus because my mind drifts. So watching a show, listening to music really changes my mindset. But I am telling you today that mental health is not taboo. Mental health does not have to be scary if your first experience was impactful like mine was. I want to encourage you today that therapy is for everyone. No matter if your problem feels so small and you think only people who go to therapy have really big, impactful things. Nah, y'all, trauma is trauma. Okay? There could be something that impacted you at a very young age that feels like a one-off, but you need to talk about it. Go do it. Ask your friends if they're in therapy. Ask who their therapists are. Reach out and say, hey, I'd like to find a therapist. Go online and search and try therapists. It's not personal. It's like dating. You go to a session. If you're not feeling it, you thank them and you go and you look for someone else. I've been to 3 therapists. This is my 3rd therapist and I like her a lot, but this is my 3rd therapist in the last 2 years. I tried it previously twice and both the people were a no-go after a couple sessions. I was like, I'm not here for this. It might take you a while to get back on the horse, but mental health is no joke. It is an absolute normal activity. And if someone in your life shames you or guilts you for it, time to investigate some boundaries. Time to let that person know if they can't support you trying to be your best self, then they need to wait to be in your life until they can. Because anybody who shames you for seeking to make yourself well is ridiculous. If you were sick at home and you called a friend and you're like, I don't feel good, I feel sick. And they were like, whatever, you baby. We need to check that relationship, okay? So I want to tell you, if someone hasn't told you today, you are loved. You are worthy. You have exponential and limitless potential. You are needed here. And I love you. And I am happy that you're here. I hope you have a wonderful day. I hope that you do things that bring your heart joy. And I hope that if this resonated with you, you can share it with someone. And I am so grateful that you're here. And that's all.